Hey you, out there in the cold, getting lonely, getting old, can you feel me? Hey you, standing in the aisles with itchy feet and fainting smiles, can you feel me? Hey you, don't help them to bury the lies. Without a fight.
Live from the Gateway to the West, this is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie on Premier Radio Networks.
You want to go ghost hunting tonight? How about checking in on the Bermuda Triangle as well? That and much more just ahead with our guest Joshua Warren on Coast to Coast AM. Joshua Warren wrote his first book when he was a puppy at the age of 13. Since then, he has had six more books published, including Haunted Asheville, The Evil in Asheville, and his latest book, How to Hunt Ghosts. Joshua is the president of his multimedia productions company called Shadowbox Enterprises, founder and president of the paranormal research team Lemur, the League of Energy Materialization and Unexplained Phenomena Research. In addition, each January, Warren produces, hosts an interactive paranormal conference. He plans trips. He goes into some of these areas where ghosts are hunting people. And you never get scared, though, Joshua, do you?
No, not really. Startled a little bit from time to time, but never frightened.
Now, how you been? What's new?
I've been great. This is my favorite show, George, so I always look forward to coming back. Thank you for having me. And I believe the last time we spoke was August, and of course we are out there every single day exploring the unknown, and even though we specialize in ghost research, Lemur is open-minded about investigating all paranormal phenomena, and so we've been up to quite a bit since our last conversation.
You're starting to get some serious recognition. You always did, Joshua, but now you're getting it in some more publications. Electric Spacecraft Journal has written some information and is publishing as well. Tell me about that.
Yes, we are very proud that we made the cover of Electric Spacecraft Journal for our work regarding plasma activity, where we have taken some of the phenomena in the field, such as ghostly manifestations, earth lights, even flying saucers that people have reported, and been able to reproduce some of the things people have described in the laboratory in a controlled setting repeatedly, and we have therefore been able to understand a lot more about why some of this activity occurs, how we can predict it, and ultimately how it sort of ties into the natural sciences.
So are you saying that the paranormal kind of blends into the scientific world?
It absolutely does. Everything is a part of the scientific process in a way, or in other words, everything can be studied scientifically. And the difficult part has always been nailing down all the variables. I mean, paranormal phenomena usually manifest inconsistently to the casual observer. And the hard part is finding all those tiny little variables, all those little parts of the atmosphere that have to be exactly right in order for something to materialize in some extraordinary way. And we end up finding that even though it's easy for us to say something is a ghost or an alien or a UFO or a cryptid, ultimately, we're talking about how we perceive reality in general, and I think a good example of that is certain cases where our team will be set up in a room where a ghost is supposed to materialize, and we may have three cameras and three people, and suddenly an anomaly appears, and one camera sees that anomaly as a mist, another camera sees it as an orb of light that goes shooting through, another camera sees nothing, one person in the room sees a full-bodied apparition, another person experiences a physical touch, another person hears a sound. It's different for everybody and everything, and at that point you ask the question, whose or what's perception of reality is the correct perception? And the answer is there is no correct perception. Reality is a flexible thing, and so we always have to address these anomalies with a very specific mindset in terms of how we define these phenomena.
I'm going to read a little abstract from the Electric Spacecraft Journal about the work you've done, Joshua. It's called Interference Patterns, an Electrically Statically Contained Plasma. For years, Joshua Warren has been investigating the Brown Mountain Lights, an unexplained natural occurrence in North Carolina. In an attempt to simulate the phenomenon in the laboratory, Warren used high-potential DC fields, which generated rippling plasma interference patterns. How close did you get to what the people have witnessed at Brown Mountain?
Extremely close. And, of course, one thing that is very complicated about this subject matter is that at Brown Mountain, our team was able to determine and prove in the laboratory that certain special geologic conditions of the mountain were capable of producing some of these anomalies that have been observed, such as these spheres of multicolored lights that are seen floating throughout the trees. Sometimes people walk up to them and touch them and receive a shock. When they appear, our equipment goes berserk. But what's so complicated is that, does this mean that people are seeing these plasmas and interpreting them as ghosts or UFOs? Or does that mean that a place that produces so much energy naturally also is able to stimulate ghostly activity and UFOs? Because we do have reports of people saying they've been abducted, people saying they see the apparitions of Native Americans, Cherokee and Catawba Indians, going out to battle en masse. And these are things that, if accurate, we cannot account for solely based upon our findings related to plasma. And so you always have that sort of a dilemma regarding does the fact this high energy place creates these types of manifestations explain it all? Or is that just another big piece in the puzzle that explains why that some of these other things on the exterior that we cannot necessarily so easily explain occur as well?
That's what they would say in court, Joshua, reasonable doubt. And there is reasonable doubt because we really don't know what direction to go in, because I think you're right. Could these plasmas be natural occurrences and therefore everything that people have seen in terms of orbs and ghosts be just that? Or is it the reverse? Are they indeed seeing these ghosts and orbs, and they are stimulated, of course, and brought forward by these natural occurrences as well? And it could be a combination of both.
That's what I tend to think. I mean, personally, at this point, I have gathered so much evidence, both physically with our equipment and also eyewitness testimony. And, we have this bad habit of just sort of discounting eyewitness testimony, and yet we put people in prison every single day based upon the weight of that. And as a matter of fact, I was listening earlier when a police officer called in and talked about having a ghostly experience. And just recently, some police officers contacted me close to where I live here in the Blue Ridge Mountains of Western North Carolina, telling me about their station being haunted. And these are people who make a profession out of their credibility, of being able to testify in court to determine a person's fate. And it's quite compelling when you hear them talk about seeing these extraordinary things. And so when a person says, I have seen a full-bodied apparition, I have seen what appeared clearly to me to be an alien or something like that, we can't just outright discount that as being bunk, because the human senses are sensitive to things that we cannot detect with some of our equipment that is artificially created. I mean, we just don't have the complexity to match the human brain or whatever the human mind is. And so, indeed, you have this very tricky sort of ground you're exploring when it comes to these subjects, where on one hand, you can say that, sure, we are able to take the equipment out there and document as much as possible within the limitations of the equipment. But when people are out there saying that they see these ghosts and UFOs and so on, and you realize that most people don't have the equipment to carry around with them when they're at these locations, we can always appreciate the potential of the human perception to experience things that we cannot document with our tools.
A group of police officers in Houston, when they're not on duty, they're ghost hunters. And they actually go out and they do hunting. And again, when you talk about professions of people, the callers we've had over the years, Joshua, on this program, they're incredible. And I got to tell you, I'm at a point in my life now where I believe these people. And sure, some of them might be great stories that they might create. But by and large, these people who call us are scared. They're concerned. What they've seen, what they've experienced are real happenings. And I am now convinced, just because of them, that there's something out there that we really haven't explained yet. And, you know, you're starting to with your scientific work into this area. But I think it's real. I absolutely do.
Oh, yeah. And actually, just recently, a reporter came to interview me about our work. And he has a long career behind him as a police officer and is now working in Homeland Security in New York and does paranormal investigation on the side. And he confirmed for me that the very same strategy and techniques used for police investigation is what you use for paranormal investigation. The two complement each other very nicely. And I'm familiar with the story you mentioned about the police officers in Houston. And indeed, now that we have more advanced technology available to the consumer for a lower price, more accessible altogether, and we have the communication capability due to the internet and all these programs we have on almost any night you could turn on History Channel, Travel Channel, Discovery, and find something about the paranormal. It's gotten to the point where people who have these skills, these very necessary investigation skills, are realizing that they apply to a wide, wide range of unexplained phenomena. And I believe that we are living in a point in time where within the next decade, we're going to see some major advances in understanding some stuff that's been so mysterious for so long.
What is the connection between electricity, which appears to be everywhere with these sightings, and paranormal events? Why the two? There's got to be this tie in then.
That is an excellent question, and I think that is probably the fundamental question when it comes to understanding majority of what people describe as being paranormal phenomena. And let me start by saying that from what I have learned due to our experiments in the laboratory, the understanding of electricity, the basics that most of us learned in school in the textbooks, is flawed. The main reason for that is we have this idea that electrical charge is primarily stored in conductors, that, you know, if you have metal or water, that's where you have to worry about getting the shock necessarily. But there was an experiment that I learned about recently that I find absolutely fascinating that I'd like to describe for the listeners.
Sure, please.
A capacitor is a very simple device used in electrical theory that basically is a non-conductor, let's say a piece of plastic, with two conductors on either side of it. So you could take, say, a Tupperware container, have a piece of aluminum foil on the inside and the outside, and you have a capacitor. Some call them a condenser. This is a device that is able to store small electrical charges to a point where you have a large electrical charge, and then it discharges with a great deal of power. Now, when you have this non-conductor with the two conductors on either side of it, and you charge it up, you can then remove the conductors from the non-conductor. So let's go back to the piece of plastic example. You've got a piece of plastic, you have two pieces of foil, one on either side. The pieces of foil are not touching. You charge them up, and then you remove them from the piece of plastic. Then you can test each piece of foil, and neither piece of foil has a charge. You put them back onto the piece of plastic, and you connect them, and bang, you get a discharge. Now, what that shows us is that the charge is actually within the piece of plastic. The
right.
charge is in the conductor. And where it gets really weird is that a capacitor will work in a vacuum. So you can take two pieces of metal and put them side by side in a vacuum, and they will still function. So if the charge is not in the metal, and the vacuum doesn't have one observable or detectable, measurable molecule of matter, where is the charge being stored? The idea there is that the vacuum itself, whatever this fabric is that we consider space-time, has this inherent ability to contain energy. And what I think is that, considering we have the potential for energy at every single point in space, and especially around our planet, that there are certain places where at certain times, under certain conditions, we are able to glean a bit more energy, electrical energy, from the vacuum, if you will, that is able to stimulate some of this paranormal phenomenon. And now, this could occur on a smaller scale inside someone's house. It can occur on a larger scale in the Bermuda Triangle. And we can talk more about the implications of all those variables. But ultimately, I think that electricity being an absolute inherent part of what we consider the universe means there is an enormous amount of potential energy at every point in space-time, and at some places in space-time, this energy is able to be released and create some of these amazing phenomena.
Years ago, Joshua, a fellow by the name of William Reich had a theory of what he called orgon, which he claimed was throughout this entire universe, and that it was a type of energy much similar to what you've been talking about tonight. This destroyed his life. They went after him. They didn't want him to talk about this for some reason. And, you know, they called him a charlatan, and it ruined him. It really did. But I think he was on to something. I think he believed that there was this untapped source, whatever it might be, in the universe. And that could also explain, I think, the tie-in, the connection between the electricity and the paranormal.
I think you're absolutely right. I am fascinated by Reich's work, and I've studied it quite a bit. And as you said, I mean, the guy had his books burned and died in prison because he was considered such a quack in his day. But I've done quite a bit of work on myself, as well as Lemur, regarding this concept of orgon. And orgon really is the bioenergy, the same thing we might consider chi or ki or prana. It's the idea that there is some kind of an energy there which is really the determinant between life and death. And we might think of it as being a subtle thing, but it's also a very powerful thing. I mean, for example, Reich would create instruments he called cloudbusters, which would actually control the weather. And I have done quite a few experiments with cloud busting, and it has always been successful for me. And to sort of clarify for your listeners, ultimately the idea is that there is this intimate relationship between the life energy and moisture, which we know is true because, you know, you and I are mainly just water and
absolutely
empty space.
Absolutely, 70%, some at least 80.
Yeah, and so the idea is that a cloud forms because you have this excess amount of orgon energy, which always has a tendency to go back to the earth. And so you create these devices which basically drains the orgon from the cloud to the earth, and it sort of it slowly disperses the cloud's energy into the earth, and so it never gets to the point, that critical mass, where it comes down in the form of rain. And I actually spent some time on an hourly basis getting radar images from the Weather Service of different fronts moving through my area when I had cloud busters set up, and it was amazing. It was like there was some kind of a bubble around my area, and these fronts would just split and go right around that area. And I mean, I have this available for anybody who wants to see it. And so even though that is a confirmation that Reich was onto something, the basic idea there is that indeed, as you were saying, there is some kind of an energy there. You can call it many different names, but it's not a matter of us being able to have instruments that are sensitive enough to detect it. It's a matter of filtering. We just have to know exactly how to tune our instrumentation so that we can detect that. And last year we spent some time studying martial artists in Chicago who project bioenergy fields. We can get to that some later, but that also may have relevance to this special type of energy.
Okay, and when we come back, let's also talk about how a ghost manifests, what the process might be. I'm George Norrie, Joshua Warren, our guest. Make sure you take a look at his websites, related websites as well, linked up to his name on coasttocoastam.com.
To access the audio archives of Coast to Coast AM, log on to coasttocoastam.com. Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie, live from somewhere deep below the earth on Premier Radio Networks.
The Filament Book Club is available to you when you call 1-888-95-E-BOOK. That's 1-888-95-E-BOOK or their website, Filament, F-I-L-A-M-E-N-T, filamentbookclub.com. Now, what's so important about this? Well, not only do you get a number of books through the Filament Book Club, but more importantly, you get a free electronic book when you subscribe and become a member of their club. So it's filamentbookclub.com or 1-888-95-E-BOOK. By the way, Friday, first hour, very special guest on Coast to Coast. His name is Prophet Yahweh, and he says that he has the ability to summon UFOs at will. And he's going to do it, and we'll be talking with him about that. First hour, Friday on Coast to Coast AM. And Joshua Warren is his name. He's our guest tonight on Coast to Coast. Joshua, how then does a ghost manifest? Does it use some of these electrical particles in the air, in the atmosphere, in the universe? How does it work?
Well, the best way to predict when you have the highest chances of a ghost manifesting physically, and I use that word physically because there are times when a ghost is observable to an individual who may have a special ability we don't understand to see them, but is not necessarily observable to our equipment, is when the humidity is low. And we have found this time and time again. In fact, there was recently a news story that came out of Scotland, if I'm not mistaken, where some very skeptical, critical scientists had researched some areas below Scotland and the underground areas and found that indeed the areas that people claim they had the most paranormal experiences at had the lowest levels of humidity. And we get the most outstanding reports of ghosts manifesting when the humidity is low, according to hair standing on end, seeing physical light forms, the perception of a touch of some kind, a cold spot. All these things we've been able to duplicate artificially in the laboratory using electrostatic charges. And so I tend to think that whatever a ghost is, and we can get into the definition of a ghost if you'd like, a ghost actually manipulates the available electrostatic charges in an environment in order to manifest. And if you take a magnet, for example, you cannot see the lines of force emanating from the magnet, but if you put it underneath a piece of paper, you sprinkle iron filings on it, well, you have a physical representation of those lines of force. And so I think that a ghost is the same. A ghost may be invisible, but it's able to take, instead of iron filings, electrostatic charges out of the environment, and that allows it to have a form that can interact with our physical world, very much like the invisible man might wrap himself in bandages so that you can see him.
Do you believe there's some intelligence behind these ghosts?
In some cases, I have to say, the more I investigate ghosts, the more I think that they are most often explained as some kind of a redundant, unaware, non-interactive imprint from the past. Now, I'm not saying that I don't think that there are active, conscious entities. But most often, I think we're looking at something that borders on a form of time travel. Because we know, according to quantum physics, that time is just an illusion, that basically the past, present, and future seem to be occurring at the same time, and we're just experiencing it day by day. And I think that at some places, and especially when the conditions are right and the right type of observer is there, we're able to perform a type of mental time travel. We have this idea that we could create a time machine if we have the technology to withstand certain forces and exceed certain speeds. And even though we don't have that technology, we don't understand the human mind. And so the human mind might be able to travel at speed and withstand forces or do whatever is necessary to see or glimpse somewhat into the past. And I think that most often, that's what we're looking at, some type of an imprint. Now, I personally have never directly seen or recorded any evidence that a ghost is indeed an interactive spirit of someone or something that once lived, but I have thousands and thousands of reports from people all over the world who have told me of experiences they've had, which clearly indicate some type of an interaction. And so if I am to believe that any of those are accurate, well, then I must believe that in some cases we are looking at a conscious entity. And I always make it clear when I address this subject that, you know, even to people who live at places that are haunted, the activity there is rare to them. And so the chances of a group like ours waltzing in there and spending a night or two and seeing something, the chances are so low, it's like hitting the jackpot. And so that's why it's very important for people who find themselves with access, that is to say homes or whatever else, properties where this activity is occurring, they have to take whatever measures are necessary to gather as much information as possible on their own, because a group that comes in on a limited basis can only do a very limited amount.
All right, let's get your take then, Joshua, on what you think a ghost might be based on some of these things that you've just talked about.
Well, I think that a ghost is probably the residual effect. Well, let me stop myself right there. And first, let me give my technical definition of a ghost. And I'm not saying that to sort of distance myself from the idea of a ghost. A lot of different people mean a lot of different things when they use that word. So I'll tell you what I mean when I use it. To me, a ghost is some paranormal aspect of the physical form and or mental presence that appears to exist apart from the original physical form. And that may sound tedious, but it's necessary in order to address all the different kinds of reports and experiences that people describe as being ghostly. And keep in mind, the word appears in that definition is especially important because it means that a ghost could be something that we cannot scientifically differentiate from a hallucination. On the other hand, we are most interested in seeing what kinds of objective things occur in an environment at the same time that the subjective experience of seeing the ghost or having whatever encounter with the ghost occurs. So given that I've said that, I think that whenever a very traumatic event occurs, the easiest examples are murders and suicides and things like that.
Car crashes, things like that.
Sure. But whenever something really traumatic happens, there is such a degree of mental energy that is expended that it does make a tangible impact on an environment that makes that incident more liable to be accessible after the incident occurs. And we don't only have to look at it as being ghostly. The Tibetans have this idea of what they call the tulpa. The tulpa being a thought form that if you focus and you concentrate enough on some idea, you can eventually make that idea manifest. Now, I believe that is true, and I believe that because the human mind is no different than any other physical object. How else could we move our bodies around just by thinking we want our bodies to move? The human mind has physical impact. That's how magic works, for example, in my opinion. You know, people focus their thoughts on some specific goal, and they are able to send their thoughts out just like a bullet, just like a rocket. And if it's focused enough, whatever they want to achieve will manifest in a materialistic, superficial manner. And, you know, you have these stories about Walter Gibson, for example. He was the author who created the Shadow Books, which, of course, was the popular radio series. And a few years back, they made a movie and so on. And the story about his residence in Greenwich Village is that he wrote at an extraordinary rate. I mean, he would crank out sometimes a novel in 3 or 4 days.
And he was a little more prolific than Stephen King, wasn't he?
Yeah, you could say so. He would just crank those things out week after week. And supposedly, after he moved out of the residence, people who would live in his house claimed that they would actually see the spirits, if you will, as they called them, or the ghosts of his characters. They would see the shadow, or they would see various villains whipping around corners and dashing down halls and so on. And these were imaginary, fictional characters that he created in his mind, but he focused so intensely on them that it seems they were able to take on a life of their own. And we also have stories about people who have gotten together and artificially created the idea of a ghost that eventually manifested. But without getting too in-depth with those experiences, the idea being that the human mind seems to have this enormous potential to create a physical impact on the environment that is able to, in some cases, resonate and gain independence apart from the mind that created it. And so I think in many cases these ghosts are very similar to that, because some kind of a traumatic incident occurs, maybe the same amount of energy that Walter Gibson expended in a month of shadow novel writing is expended in a second or two of violence, and you have a ghostly occurrence. And those are there in addition to these much more rare occurrences where you may have what you would consider an entity, where you have some kind of a conscious, interactive, disembodied spirit, what we would think of more traditionally as a ghost.
I was just going to ask you that. Do you then see that these ghosts to be very different than something from the spirit world?
The imprint type ghosts?
Yes.
Yeah, I see them to be very different indeed. In fact, even though this may seem like a bit of a different kind of an example, you know, I recently read this story about astronomers witnessing what may be for the first time a black hole forming, and you know, they saw this flash of visible light and this burst of gamma rays occurred, and it was 2.2 billion light years away. And what that means is that 2.2 billion years ago this happened, and we are just now seeing it. And that in itself is almost like a form of time travel in a way, and we look at that in terms of linear distance. But I do wonder if we know the idea of space-time is something which is flexible, it can be warped and so on. I do wonder if sometimes when something occurs here on our own planet, if it might just take some time for the effects of that incident to make their way around the planet or through the environment or whatever, and once in a while they pop out once and again. Maybe there is this sort of a harmonic frequency that they have to reach. They go out to the environment, they deflect, they bounce back, and every so often they converge, and if you're there at the right time, you get to see these things. And so it very much is an illusion in terms of what we would think of normally as a ghost being a spirit. And if we are to look at ghosts that are spirits, that are entities, that are interactive and aware, then it seems often that those spirits are there for a temporary period of time. You have people who talk about seeing a spirit of a loved one right after that person has passed away. And it makes you wonder, well, is this just some kind of an hallucination this person is having because they missed this loved one? Or is there a certain period of time after you die when, before you move on to the next phase of existence, you're still able to come here and take care of a few issues here on Earth? And then maybe you don't want to go in some cases, and that's when you end up with a spirit that sticks around. But I do have to reiterate that based upon my personal experiences after 15 years of research and going to between 500 and 1,000 haunted houses, I have never directly seen any conclusive evidence that humans survive physical death.
But that doesn't mean it doesn't happen.
Correct. Yeah, I'm only speaking from my experience. For all I know, tomorrow I'll go do an investigation and I'll call you and say, George, you're never going to believe what happened. I had a conversation with a ghost, and you know, here's what happens when we die. I mean, I have no doubt that that could possibly occur tomorrow or tonight. But so far, I haven't seen it. And if anything, all that shows you is the rarity of that, at least when you go in using the scientific method legitimately.
Well, you know, I can't see particles, for example, in the air, but I know they're out there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the same is true with these ghosts. Now, when we talk about spirits, do you understand that to be the same as a soul?
Yeah, I think so. You know, there are a lot of different terms and semantic games and so on that people play with these things. But for me, I basically use, you know, spirit, phantom, specter, wraith, apparition, shade. I use all those words interchangeably. The only time that I would use a separate term is when I talk about an imprint, which again is some type of a vision from the past. And, you know, as you mentioned as well, talking about particles that you cannot see, often when I discuss this subject matter with people, I tell them, you know, right now we are surrounded by all of these beings that are living, but we cannot see them, cannot feel them. We might never know they were there if it weren't for a microscope. But because of a microscope, voila, we have this whole world of beings around us that we never imagined existed before, and in fact many people thought that it was a bunch of bunk right after the original scientists started talking about microscopic organisms. And so this very simple tool, the microscope, opened our eyes to this whole new realm of life. And so what we're trying to do as paranormal investigators is find out what type of new microscope, if you will, we need in order to possibly see this other realm, a new realm of life that's all around us that we just don't currently have the technology to perceive. And if it's there and we reach the point someday where we can detect it, it's going to be just as big of a breakthrough.
Joshua, give us a story of an investigation that still sticks out in your mind.
Well, there are two that come to mind right off the bat, and I've probably told you these in the past, but it shows you how outstanding they are. The one is the first time I ever saw, and fortunately we were able to videotape, physical objects moving in a house without visible physical explanation. And the other is the first and to date only time I have seen an apparition. So I'd have to say that even though I am really stunned whenever I see something physical move, when we don't have some means of explaining it, seeing that apparition was sort of the most magical experience for me. So I'll tell you about that one. Basically, a young lady called me up one morning and said that she had left her house at 4:30 that morning and was never going to go back unless there was something that my team could do to help her because of what she had experienced, and wanted to know if we could get rid of ghosts. And I told her, like I tell most people, we're not Ghostbusters, we're not exorcists. We simply go in and try to document the activity. And who knows, maybe if we study it, we'll find something that we can adjust or something that could be changed that would help her. But we certainly could not guarantee that. So anyway, she had moved to this house a short time before, and when she first moved in, she, the very first time, saw what appeared to be a dark intruder in her home, and she actually called 911.
And hold it right at that point, Joshua, because when we come back, I'll have you finish that story. We're going to talk about some other issues as well. Mothman, flying saucers, his trip to the Bermuda Triangle, and so much more. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment with our special guest tonight, Joshua Warren, on Coast to Coast AM.
Podcasting, the new way to get Coast to Coast AM to your computer. Available to all StreamLink subscribers at coasttocoastam.com.